The first successful stress test, a softer side to Taffer, and where are they now? Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I love Jeff Graham sitting next to me, giving me that thumbs up like, oh, you did it. You did your job.
You didn't just do your job. You did your job well, Roxy Stryer.
Thank you. I like that word. You intro me, I intro you. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Way to go, Jeff.
Hey.
High five. We are here covering Bar Rescue Season 6, Episode 12. Not a softer side of Taffer. That's my note about
the
him being
the first successful
soft.
Stress test.
This first successful stress test, a softer side of Taffer, and down and out in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Well, I feel like we weren't down and out in Las Vegas. I feel like we had been, but now we're doing well in Vegas.
During the show, we got there.
We're
definitely
thriving in Vegas.
Thriving in Vegas.
Katy Perry style. We're waking
Katy Perry
up
style.
There.
Waking up there, thriving there. Yeah, I mean, I think, but down and out definitely applies to the early segments of this episode.
Oh, boy. And I got to say, it was a tearjerker for me. I don't know if you're willing to admit on air that you were crying, Jeff, but I know that you must have been.
Well, okay, so here's the ironic thing. I will say I was very emotionally moved. In terms of, like, things I cry at, it's pretty much just E.T., and Little Miss Sunshine. But I will say, I felt pretty emotionally wrecked by a lot of what we saw in this episode.
It was gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And I'm a massive Bar Rescue fan, and I think that a lot of these episodes have that beautiful, I'm crying because I'm so happy by the end, and we're really changing their lives feeling. But not as many have me legitimately feeling awful for these people. The times that we go to an area that has been devastated, yes. So if there was a natural disaster, or if there is reason for me to feel really bad, but usually I'm like, you're just being selfish and you're bad at what you do and you're taking everybody around you and making them suffer.
Right.
And I didn't feel that way this episode, and that was really hard for me when I was watching this.
Yeah, this was, and as you know, you're a super fan of the show. I haven't seen quite as much, which the fans know. Kevin is very graciously letting me come back week after week, but I've coming to love the show more and more, and I've been watching it, and I just quickly, I will say, I understand why people love this show. I'm kind of an addict now.
Yeah, it really is amazing. Thank you for mentioning Kevin, by the way.
Yeah.
We are not Kevin Undergaro.
Sorry,
and
guys.
I know you guys love him and miss him, and he is the expert.
Yeah.
But hopefully we're close enough. We're trained by him. We're loved by him, and I even know John Taffer. So does that count as somebody who should be sitting here?
That definitely counts. And as a quick tease, I do want to say, Roxy has some John Taffer insider info about this season that we'll be talking about later in the after show.
Yeah, good tease, good tease. We're also, of course, going to break down the entire episode, and we're going to talk about Where Are They Now, which is, of course, always the most depressing part of the show. But let's get into this with the first night and what happens there. What was your first impression when you saw this group? Were you as quick to peg what the problem was as John was?
Yeah, I think like...
yeah.
Well, we were talking about Chris, who's the owner of this bar, and it's not uncommon on this show that the problems stem from the top. It's not uncommon in business that the problems stem from the top. But this is a very special case, and we'll get into why, but yeah, I think Chris is the kind of... He's not a narcissist, you know?
No.
He is someone who clearly is actively struggling with grief and alcoholism.
However, I can hear Kevin Undergaro's voice inside my head right now saying, are we so quick to say he's not a narcissist? Now, he is struggling, absolutely, and he has reason to be struggling. But when you have spent the last 12 years owning a bar and you've been struggling for the last 6 years, and you're taking everybody down that you love with you, and you're watching your fiance of 5 years cry and suffer all of the time, are there narcissistic tendencies? Can we really say there aren't?
It's true.
I don't know enough about that to speak on it, but I hear Kevin in my ear right now saying he might be a narcissist.
Well, yeah, and there's different levels of narcissism, right? There's sort of like the selfish narcissism, then there's like sort of the pathological narcissism.
Right.
I mean, my take on it is that all of the stuff you mentioned, of course, 6 years of failing his crew, just like a lack of work ethic and, like, you know, not treating his fiance well. I think all of that probably stems from the very deep. I think he probably doesn't care because he's dealing with grief that outweighs all of that.
Yeah, probably. I didn't like how he pulled an Oprah with "you're wrong." Just like, he's not saying you get a car, but just over again, "you're wrong and you're wrong and you're wrong." I was like, come on, man. You're wasted in your bar right now. Who's wrong?
This was weird to watch, though, because sometimes we'll watch drunk bartenders who are still clearly, they're intoxicated, but you can tell they have at least a handle on how they'd like to present themselves.
Yes.
But this was an example of someone who was very visibly and audibly drunk.
Yes. And wouldn't admit that he was drunk. Mm-hmm. And that is very typical of an alcoholic.
Right.
He's standing there, he's swaying, he can't quite stand up. His fiance is crying, and he's like, it's fine.
I
it's
know.
All fine. So that's really rough. So we had Chris, like you were talking about right now. We had Amber, the fiance, Paige, the manager we met, who actually impressed me from the start.
Yeah.
She seemed to have her stuff together very early
There's
on.
There's always one of those.
Yeah.
You feel like they're like the qualified person who's just kind of stuck in the mud with a group of struggling coworkers.
Exactly. I was a little weary about Justin at first.
Me too.
Because we see him on that first night say he's in the kitchen and it's not working out, and he walks right out of there. And I'm thinking to myself, is there more going on than just Chris not being a good owner?
Right.
But by the end of the episode, we came full circle on him, which we will touch upon.
Yeah.
You were worried about him as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a segment, guys, that we'll get to called Taffer Takeaway. And my eventual Taffer Takeaway will kind of factor into what I'm about to say. But I was very surprised he just up and left. I mean, like, I feel like it's
in the middle of a shift.
Just right in the middle of a shift. Like, I feel like it's one thing to be like, I need 15 minutes, go back, clear your head and finish your shift. But he was just like, nope, F it, I'm leaving.
Here's the thing people have to remember when they skip out on their shift. Who are you hurting?
Right.
Are you hurting your very, very boss who owns the place? Probably not if you're working there. Are you hurting your coworkers and your friends who now have to work twice as hard to cover your tables or whoever you're serving? Yes. Are you hurting yourself because now you look like the person who walked out? Yes. So if your mentality is stick it to the man, remember, you're not actually sticking it to the man in that situation. And I think we all get heated, and that moment probably got the best of him. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt, and I was like, maybe he could still win me over. And I'm glad we did. We had a couple other bartenders. We had Johnny, we had Carrie, and we had Carmella. And they were a little bit more background this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem like we had huge problems with them either way to start, but it also didn't seem like any of them were going to be our champions.
I do feel like Carrie, we'll get into it, but I feel like she had a nice arc on this show. She kind of won my heart a little bit.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
She was very willing.
Uh-huh.
Very willing to participate, which I really like. We had some awesome experts come in. Ryan Scott and Sean Ford, our mixologist, and I loved their energy.
Yeah, me too.
I loved everybody's energy this episode because it was the least angry we've seen and more like, let's figure this out. We've got to get it done. We already know you guys are struggling, so here is our kind of joking manner, but we're dead serious.
Yeah, I was texting with Kev last night, actually. He's sad to not be here, guys, but he will be back. So we're going to do our best to channel a Thunder Garo energy.
Ooh.
But we were texting about it, and I was saying, you know, we've touched on it, but in a lot of these episodes, John would come out furious and justifiably. But he knew, we got to see a very empathetic side of JT this week because he knew this situation is even too sensitive for rage.
So a little insider baseball on this one. What's been very interesting about my few interactions with John Taffer is that, and I know a lot of people who've met him say this, he does not ever raise his voice. He never walks in a room and seems pissed off or like he's angry about where he's come from. I've never seen him even really speak above a normal volume. He is smiling. He is clear. He is happy. And that is John Taffer in his everyday life. Now, I've asked him about this.
Mm-hmm.
Is the yelling a tactic? Or is it because this is just the most stressful, frustrating situation? And I think he has talked about it being kind of a combination of all things. Like, it's the only way to get your point across in these situations when people are in dire straits and they have to do this. But I think the best coaches know their players.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked in here. He very quickly assessed the situation. He found out that Chris was somebody who was suffering from loss. He had lost his stepson to cancer. He had lost his ex-wife to suicide, and that's not somebody who usually is receptive to screaming.
Yeah. I think It was clear to me in this episode, and the more I watched the show, it's becoming clear to me that John is just incredibly empathetic. I think he has a very, very deeply rooted ability to see people and know how to reach them. And through a lot of these kind of, you know, maybe narcissistic, longtime bar owners, yelling is the way to reach them.
Yes. Empathetic, I would agree, but even more so than that, goal-oriented. Mm-hmm. And he knows what the objective is.
Right.
So how do you get there?
Yeah.
And looking at this, he was able to use his empathy, but he's also just able to use his pure smarts mm-hmm. to see, listen, I know I have to get this guy to a good enough place. How do we do that? We have to get him to stop drinking. We've got to get him to show up on time and not be hungover. We've got to get everybody else up to snuff. So what's the best way to do that? I think it's to be nurturing in mm-hmm. this situation, goal-oriented. Yeah. Got to get them to the end of the road, which is really smart at the end of the day.
Definitely.
And also sensitive and empathetic and, yes, good person. I agree.
But in 3 days, you've got to get the job done.
Yeah, you absolutely do. And this just wasn't going to cut it because the next morning after night one, when we get there, after we've had cold chicken try to be served that Chris won't eat, and the two poor men that went and did recon, Todd and Chip from Coyote 102.7, who almost had to eat like dust and dirt and grime and ugh.
And it was the grease that was like, normally you should be able to see through grease. This was just
dusty and it was like bubbling.
Yeah.
After all of that, we get there the next day. I'm thinking, okay, new morning, we got this. Chris, show up strong. You said you were going to do this. And he's just not there.
He wasn't there.
It's the first time somebody just didn't show.
It was funny. There was a moment I was wondering if maybe the producers had their hands on this a little bit, but John seemed genuinely shocked.
And not only did he seem genuinely shocked, but in case we were thinking that, I love that the show was like, No, Justin, get in the car. We're taking the camera crew. We're following you there so we can see what's going on. And we see firsthand that Chris is just a combination of too drunk / too hungover. Amber legitimately cannot get him out of a room, out of the house. And we needed to send one of our men. We needed more manpower to get somebody out of their house.
Out of a room.
Out of their room. Crazy,
yeah.
A completely capable, able-bodied person to get out of a room. We couldn't do it.
One thing I will say about this scene, as someone who lives in Los Angeles, I was very impressed by the prospects of Las Vegas real estate. Did you see how nice their place was?
Yeah.
I was just thinking,
Have you not heard about this?
No, I don't think so.
There are people who commute from Las Vegas to LA, as a little side note, because you can pay $400 a month to live in a home.
Yeah. I was like blown away. I was like, I can't believe a struggling alcoholic bartender has a home that's four times the size of my apartment, beautifully lit.
We're like, not talking about just struggling. $100,000 in the hole.
Yeah.
Losing $3,500 every month. And you're living in a palace.
It was gorgeous. It shows my current living situation and just living in LA in general that was kind of the most visceral reaction I had to that whole scene.
But I know what you mean.
It's just personal.
And he's paying to have he has a kid right now,
yeah.
too.
It was nice
Gosh,
place. But wow. He would not leave.
So one of your Taffer takeaways at the end, I'm guessing, is going to be if you don't have money, move to
Vegas.
Vegas and you could live like a king.
Yeah.
I spoiled it real early.
There's a couple Taffer. I've got some more. So
yeah,
sorry.
I've got some too. I'm excited for that.
Yes.
And by the way, guys, if you are excited about Taffer takeaways and you have something that you really want to share, don't forget. Comment. Leave a comment on iTunes, YouTube. You can watch us live here over at AfterBuzz TV on YouTube. Or if you're a busy person with busy lives, we definitely don't want your business to fail. So don't watch us live. If you cannot do that, comment afterwards on iTunes when you're listening to our podcast. We read everything you guys have to say. And we love hearing your takeaways from the show. And not only do we read them, not only do we listen, John Taffer listens. So how cool is that? If you write a comment, chances are he just might read it.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm always creeping on YouTube, guys, so if you comment below our video, I will respond.
And Jeff Graham responding is almost as cool as Taffer seeing it.
Maybe cooler, even.
Honestly, it's a toss-up. It's kind of 50-50.
It's 50-50.
So he doesn't show up the next morning. Everybody else is there, and everybody else is ready to work. After we send Justin away, we're going to get down to it. Did you have any bets going on in your head? Are you like, okay, who's going to be good at this? Who's going to be able to step up to the plate with this? Or are you just kind of letting this all ride.
This was mostly a crew where it was very clear where the kinks were. I think there's some crews where you're like, ah, she's lazy, this guy's stoned. You can kind of see the whole machine and look at which cogs are broken.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Be lazy, be stoned. Come on, whatever you guys want.
Whatever you want. It's a free country. But sometimes you can see sort of like multiple cogs in the machine being broken versus the main engine. And for me, for the most part, besides Justin's walk away, I kind of felt like this was a group of lost sheep with a shepherd who did not have control over his sheep.
Yeah.
Was the way I saw it. So I wasn't worried. I knew that once John stepped in, they would rally quickly.
And that's why I feel like Sean Ford, our mixologist, was not typical for this show, because usually the mixologists are giving so much crap to the bartenders and they're like, you're not doing that quick enough. You can't pour this. How have you been a bartender for 15 years? What is wrong with you giving out free drinks? You can't, whatever. And they get more heated. But I think he really saw them and was like, they're actually just not trained. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to do this. They're willing to put in the effort. So I'm going to teach them.
Yep.
And he was really slow and patient with them. We got a nice tequila drink out of it that we were learning to make, which every time I watch the show, I'm like, is it bad that I'm starving and thirsty?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything looked delicious. We're going to get into the food, but
yeah.
Damn.
Well, let's just do it. Yeah. Those buffalo shrimp looking things.
Yeah.
Oh, mama.
I know.
But I was a little concerned about this, and I wonder if you were thinking the same thing. So we just the previous night had seen how disgusting this oil was. And usually on the show, I feel like they clean stuff up a little bit. Maybe we just didn't have time this episode to show it. But now all of a sudden we're cooking the shrimp in it and we're eating the shrimp. And I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, normally there's like a scene of like one of the employees like in the fryer. Like,
yeah, scrubbing it down. And we didn't see any of that. And I was just like, so are we just taking good shrimp and covering it in poopy?
I have a feeling that our expert chef, Ryan Scott, would not have let that happen.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He seemed pretty on top of it. And I really like that our players stepped up. This is when you mentioned Carrie earlier in this episode. She was like, can I learn? I haven't seen that on Bar Rescue very often. Somebody volunteers to be in the kitchen. She was so excited. She said, I always want to learn new things because, Jeff, as our fearless leader, Kevin Undergaro, says, if you're not growing, you're dying.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was really cool of her.
I like, for some reason, Carrie, like, really weirdly won me over this episode. I was like, should I, like, find her on Facebook? And, like,
I think that's obviously what you need to do.
Yeah, after this, I will. Sure. Carrie, if you're watching right now, which you might be, you're a champ.
She is really a champ.
Yeah.
I actually was impressed with her work ethic, too. It wasn't just when she decided to do that, but it was how she was picking things up, asking questions, learning mistakes the first time, and then moving pretty quickly.
She's very conscientious.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. And also, Paige, our manager, decided to be in the kitchen, too. She tried to learn all that. And it's very important in business for your manager. You know how to do all of the jobs. So even if you're not doing them, you can best direct who should be there and know how long things take, what the process is, all of that. So I like that she stepped up there, too.
In general, this was a pretty solid crew.
It was so solid that they eventually get to the first successful stress test ever. So we're still not there, but I mean, solid is the understatement of the year.
Yeah, definitely.
That's pretty, pretty massive. So they do, they learn all of this stuff. And Oscar is the guy who's going to come in and take care of Chris, because now Chris finally does show up. He comes with Amber and we decide he needs counseling. We're going to get him the help he needs. Oscar shows up and are you thinking, all right, we're good, we're saved? Or are you a little skeptical in this moment?
Well, I have to applaud the show for not dancing around Chris's alcoholism. I think there's a world in which this show is not produced this way, where this episode is not produced this way. And I really felt like it was kind of a beautiful moment to see this intervention that John very effectively managed, first of all. And then for the show and John to recognize that, like, this isn't a only John will fix kind of guy. This is the kind of guy that needs additional support. I mean, as a viewer, I wasn't sure. You know, I knew that probably for the show, Chris would do what he needed to do with his counselor. The thing is, when you have a case of grief and alcoholism that's this deeply rooted, it doesn't take 3 days.
That's my biggest issue with this. And John is doing everything he can, and that's his production schedule.
Right.
He can't say, actually, let's put this on pause. Let's make sure you're going to counseling for months and then I'll come back in. He's got to get this done. So 3 days was the maximum amount of time that he could physically give to this guy. But in my head, I'm thinking, what's unfortunate for Chris right now is that when you think, okay, 3 days, I can handle that. And then after all of this, John leaves your bar. People are doing what they're doing, saying what they're saying. You're alone with your thoughts again. You have your relationship issues again. You've got a kid you've got to take care of.
Yeah.
And it's not as easy as 3 days.
Right.
And we should learn as people to take things day by day, yes, but it's very daunting. And I had a feeling, I just had that sense that I don't know if he gets out of this and is in perfect condition.
Yeah, I think what it feels like Chris needs to me is a very, very real intervention. And I feel like what we got, which was as much as the show could do. So, like, I have to applaud John and the producers.
Right.
But we got an intervention that was, I don't think, maybe did enough to really change the inside of Chris.
I liked that John was able to bring Amber into this and say she's not going to take it anymore.
Right.
Because when Chris said out loud, Amber's not going anywhere, my skin crawled.
Yeah.
Because that is how abusive relationships work. When you're treating somebody poorly and you're positive they're not going to leave and you tell them they're not going to leave and they don't leave, that's a big problem. Yeah. And so John stepped in. He saw that pattern and was like, Amber, this is the last time you take this. If he does this again, you walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she really heard him.
What John really effectively did as well, too, was ask Amber questions about Chris. Amber, is Chris being the man you need him to be? Is Chris providing for you? Is he supporting you?
Are you concerned about your future with him and what he'll be able to do there? And I think Chris heard those things, too. And it's not fun when the person that you're in love with doesn't look at you as a stable human.
Right. Nothing hurts more.
Right.
And so that was so, because it's the true honesty of a relationship. And that stuff is so central to a relationship working. So I was so impressed and amazed by John's ability to intuit all of that stuff.
I was too. I was too. But we can understand why it was not enough for Amber. Mm-hmm. And she had a full-blown panic attack.
Yeah.
At any point were you wondering, could this be more than a panic attack? Or was it very clear to you from the start, that's exactly what's happening here?
Well, it makes sense why she would. I think all of a sudden she was realizing that her relationship was in deep turmoil. So I assumed it was a panic attack. What do you mean when you ask that question?
Well, what I mean is that when John heard that, like, she was not feeling well, she was dizzy, all of those things, and he decides to call an ambulance, which I'm guessing, by the way, for anybody who hasn't called an ambulance before, they're thousands of dollars. It's very expensive.
Right.
She definitely wouldn't have called this ambulance. She probably would have not gone to the hospital. I'm guessing that John, liability-wise, was like, we production will pick up this tab. Go ahead, take the ambulance, because he might have been nervous something more was going on.
You never really know.
And the way that the episode framed it was interesting because we heard very quickly it was a panic attack. But I was wondering, is that because they were nervous that we would be nervous? Was there anything else that they were thinking at the time? Did they think anything else could have been up? Or was it immediately like everybody recognized what this was?
I feel like, to me, I was reading it as like, this is, yeah, a crisis moment in her life. And this is just a full, I've seen one panic attack in my life, like a real, like, biological one. And it can be intense.
Really intense.
Yeah.
It can feel like you're having a mini heart attack. Mm-hmm. It can feel like you can't breathe. It can feel like you can't stand. Like,
you're going blind.
Yeah, you're going blind. There's all different symptoms that are similar to symptoms of other diseases. So
right.
I am just imagining how scary it would be to be on set in that moment. If you are Chris and you've already lost your stepson.
Wow.
And you've already lost. So I thought that that would really shake him into things. Like, that would snap him out of it and be like, uh-oh, I know that this was not as big of a health scare as maybe it could have been, but I've got to get my stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that.
That was one thing I will say about this whole episode that was kind of really heartbreaking about Chris was, even in his happiest moments, I sort of felt like he was a bit of a shell of a person. I think, like, in his eyes, you could see sort of, it just was clear that he has faced a lot of trauma. And I think there's more work to be done with Chris.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with, it doesn't take 3 days.
Right.
And that's a huge, huge undertaking he's got to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not too late, and he still can. And
hopefully is.
And anybody who is in that situation, who they just feel like life has been so, so heavy and all of that, every day is the right day to start trying to get better. Every single day.
I think connected to that, Rox, it might be a good time to just share. For those of you who are listening, And it's a timely moment, but we've lost two very wonderful, famous people this week. We lost Kate Spade and we lost Anthony Bourdain just this morning. And it just goes to show how, you know, depression and struggles do not discriminate. You know, these were two of seemingly the happiest, wealthiest, most successful, arguably the most successful people in their respective industries. And for those of you listening right now who might feel like you're struggling with similar feelings, I'm sure there's a lot of creative people listening, and it's important to note that creative people tend to struggle with this more. Just know that you're hearing a lie. People do want you here. The world does want you here. And it's never, never too late. So if you're having any of those feelings, I just personally want to tell you that it's so important to reach out to hotlines or friends or anyone. I know it can feel
for us, the hosts.
Yes, please.
We love talking to you guys if it's helpful ever.
Yeah, that stuff can feel so stigmatized and embarrassed. And I know because candidly, I've struggled with some of that myself. But it's so, so important to just feel empowered to reach out and get help, because people love you and the world wants you here. I just want that message to be heard.
I think it's important also talking about not being alone. There are two people, you're right, that are famous that we did lose this week, but there are thousands of people right. that we lost this week to that. So you are definitely not alone in your thoughts.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that people struggle with all the time. I'm really glad that you mentioned that, Jeff. Let's talk a little bit about the stress test.
Yes.
Because I couldn't believe the words that came out of John Taffer's mouth after this.
Yeah.
As a fan of the show, I never expected to hear this. And I think he was being a little lenient because he felt like these people were working their butts off and it wasn't their fault. But would you personally call this stress test a success?
Well, the one big glaring issue was that Justin was not keeping track of anyone's tabs.
So you're saying that if you're a bar and you aren't exchanging drinks for money, it's not successful?
It's maybe not like the best situation. But
I trust John, though. So if he says it was successful, he was on the ground and maybe they ended up getting every dollar they were owed.
It seems like they did. I think John implied after their stress test that Justin fixed it.
Yeah.
Which at the end of the day, that is the most important thing. If you're in the middle of a really intense work shift and you mess something up, if you fix it, you fix it.
Totally. However, if you only fix it because John points it out and John hadn't been there, what would you have done?
Right.
Drinks on the house for everybody. Yeah.
The first successful stress test with support.
Yes.
From John Taffer.
Of course, yeah. Because how could we have a successful one otherwise? There just would be no way. I felt like the bartenders were moving especially slow behind there, but it did make me feel better to know from our mixologist, Sean, that it was really challenging for them because of the setup of the bar.
Yep.
And as somebody who's worked behind a bar for many, many years, I can attest to the fact that if you don't have two guns, you can't, what do you do?
Right.
You can't physically pour that. Like, you can't both use it at the same time. So it's almost useless if you don't have two stations, at least, to have more than one bartender when only one bartender can do it at the same time. It's not completely useless because somebody can back, somebody can help. Like, there are different things you can do, but that's hard.
I also think the show is so well produced. We talk about that a lot. And if they would have given us another hurdle with a really unsuccessful stress test, it might have been a bit relentless for us as viewers, you know?
What do you mean?
Just this is an exceptionally challenging episode. You know, we're dealing with very real sickness. And I think, like, if we had gotten, like, you know, Chris losing his son, his ex-wife, won't leave the house, can't even come to work because he's too drunk, and then also the staff still can't get their shit together.
Yes.
It might have just been a lot as a viewer. It was kind of nice to have some uplift, I think, in this moment.
I agree. But we were also missing the two downery parts of the episode, which would be Amber and Chris. Amber couldn't be there because she was in the hospital still, and Chris couldn't be there because he was in counseling. So it was kind of interesting when we heard that Paige said, you know, it's sad not to have them here, but it's also a lot less stressful. And it was like, wow, maybe this place runs better when they're not here. And I don't mean to put that on Amber because it seems like she really did try, but you don't. It's not good when a business runs better when the owner isn't there. That's not what you're looking for.
Right.
So I felt for her on that one. John calling Justin out about the tabs, I loved the way that Justin reacted to that.
Yep.
Usually we see the men on this show, and I will say this is a huge generalization, but I find especially white men on this show when Taffer calls them out and you're like a studly, like he's like this studly tall white dude who like probably has not been called out many times in his life. And Taffer's like, you're not doing the tabs. For him to be humble enough.
You know, Roxy, I don't agree with that. I think it's bullshit that you say tall white men don't.
I'm so sorry, Jeff.
It's fine. You can continue. I just think that's BS.
It's not BS.
Whatever. I just personally don't like that.
For all of our iTunes listeners right now, Jeff happens to be a very handsome, tall white man. Again, huge generalization. Yeah. I really don't mean to offend anybody.
You're
on
right,
this
though.
One.
As a tall white man, I don't get to say this much. I can speak for my people. there's a toxic trend of that in this show.
Yes, and for Justin to be like, essentially, you got it, boss.
Yeah.
I was like, that's really impressive, and that's somebody that I want working for me.
Yep.
And that was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Usually on this show, you see them come back at John and clench their fists like they're going to swing at him.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know. You're only here for one day. You fly in. You think you're going to take care of it. And he was just like, okay.
I'm on it.
On it.
Mm-hmm.
Loved that.
It was great.
Yeah. Really loved that from him. And I think that brings us to our reward, because Woo! We had such an amazing stress test. Kind of like a round of applause.
Yeah, good job, team.
They made me cough. That's how excited I am. Yeah. Steven the boof with the sound effects. I like it. Good job. Yeah. These people must have been so proud of themselves.
It
especially
was sweet.
If they're Bar Rescue fans.
It was a sweet moment.
It was a really sweet moment. And we get to send two of our best to a distillery that specializes in vodka and gin.
On a private jet.
Yeah. I was out when I heard vodka and gin because I was like, no whiskey? Come on. How are you going to not take care of rocks? But it was interesting to learn about this. I love that they get to the distillery and they're like, wait, there's a difference between sweet and... Oh my God, I didn't know that. How is this... That's so cool. As a bartender, to figure out the inner workings of all of this.
Have you ever done any distillery tours or anything?
Yeah,
it's pretty
have
cool.
You?
I have. Yeah, I got to actually tour the Jose Cuervo distillery in Tequila, Mexico.
Wow.
Which was very, very, very cool. And it is important, I think, to learn about your craft.
I did the Jameson one in Dublin, which was really, really cool.
That's awesome.
And it is. And I have to say, this place kind of converted me on gin vodka train. I was like, wow, they grow it all here. It's all very fresh. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's absolutely delicious. I want to give a shout out to this place, Gray Ranch. Mm-hmm. Colby and Ashley were the ones that were showing us around there. And it was beautiful. It was clean. It was product placement at its best.
Yes.
And I appreciated it.
Are you at all a gin and vodka person?
Okay. Here's the deal. You know I'm a
whiskey.
Whiskey girl, but that's not what I was going to say. You know I'm a young drinker, like started at a very young age. And do you ever find that people who drink really young, there's one kind of alcohol they're very adverse to?
Yeah.
Because they maybe a couple too many times got a little sick?
Kamchatka, is that what it?
What's it?
That's the like cheapest vodka you can get,
no,
where it's like written in Russian.
No,
on the...
Rubinoff is the one that Rubinoff. It was in Massachusetts. And I drank a little too much vodka as a youngin', and now when I have it... It's just harsh.
Mm.
And gin was the parents' liquor of choice. So, you know, as a kid, if you're taking the liquor from the parents, it just those two, I will drink them. And watching it, they looked appealing.
They did a good job pitching
it.
Yeah,
they really
did. I'll do a gin and tonic. I do like a G&T, but in general, I'm more of a whiskey person.
You seem like a G&T kind of guy.
It's good. It's easy, clean.
You know, I've never asked Taffer what his favorite drink is. I kind of have a feeling he really doesn't drink much.
I
get that
right.
sense from him.
Yeah.
If at all.
I would not be surprised if he was a teetotaler, like if he didn't drink at all.
What's that called?
A teetotaler? I think that's right.
Did you make that word up?
I might have. Let us know in the comments. Is teetotaler a word?
And if it's not, do you want it to be?
It definitely should be if it's not. But yeah, I agree. He seems like the kind who just maybe doesn't drink.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, so many of the most talented, best people.
I know.
It's so true. So they go to the distillery. They have a great time. You can just tell the smiles on their face. Like, they felt like this was the first reward they'd gotten in so long. I think Justin said that he had never been to that part of Nevada or never been. It just seemed so, like, such a gift.
It was cool.
They weren't looking at, like, this is work. Oh, my God. They're making me go to a distillery, which sometimes happens on this show.
People are like,
I have to go on the plane and I have to go do my job. But they were so genuinely excited. So that was really cool to see. And what was even cooler to see was the reveal of our new bar. What did you think of the name, The Valley Saloon.
I think it's very good. I think one thing that's really smart about this is by calling it the Valley Saloon, you're implying it's the best one in the entire region.
The Valley Saloon. Yeah, yeah, it's the one there, especially because you're going from Barley Pops, mm-hmm. which, what is that?
Right. It's like, one of those, it might be a fine name if the bar had been a really solid bar, but...
And if it was only a barley, like true. A barley beer, why are you called Barley Pops?
Right.
I don't get it exactly.
And
what
especially
are you going for?
If they're building this partnership with gin and vodka, Barley Pops is not going to be a good name.
And like Kevin taught me this, that if you are a brand, take for example the Patriots, and you are at that time a losing brand, if people look at your brand and they look at your symbol and they look at your colors and they associate that with losing, then it's very hard to just transition into winning. You need to rebrand. Mm. You need to change your colors. You need to change your sign. Sometimes you need to change your name. And that's what they were able to do here. They completely 180 it. And the Valley Saloon sounds like a winning bar.
It's good.
That sign looked like a winning sign. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. It was still understated.
Right.
Which is how you know John really gets it. He doesn't go into every bar and make everything the flashiest, fanciest, throw the most money, the coolest. He got the vibe of this place, probably because mm-hmm. he's a Vegas guy. That's where he's from.
And on the inside, too, I think he really capitalized on... There are dive bars, and then there are, like, nice dive bars.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And this had nice wood, different shades.
But it still kind of felt divey in a way. Like, I love those kinds of bars. I think of, like, The Whaler in Venice is a bar to me that's sort of, like... I mean, the patio is really nice, but it still kind of feels like this sort of... low-key, come as you are.
Well, this is a locals bar, and they were trying to keep it as a locals bar. And if you live in this area, you probably want to be able to go to a bar with your sneakers and your jeans on and your tea, and you want to grab a quick drink after work, at night, on your lunch break, wherever you are, whatever you are.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of place, come as you are, roll in. And he always just nails the vibe of the location.
And the clientele. Yeah, I totally agree. It's like that upscale, downscale.
I definitely wanted to be able to play pool here.
Yeah.
And have a beer.
Have you been to the Brickyard in Hollywood?
Have I been to the Brickyard? Nope.
That's another one that I think has the same vibe. If any of you are LA locals, two great bars, Whaler and Brickyard. Check them out.
Okay. I'm LA local, so now I got to take your advice on that.
Absolutely.
Are you going to go with me?
Yeah.
Are we going to invite John?
Duh. Will he drink, though?
I don't care if he would drink, but I have to say I would be very concerned to go to a bar with John.
He wouldn't be able... It's like
bringing on
Kevin.
Friends, that episode where Phoebe dates the guy who
is a psychiatrist.
No, the one who can shut down businesses because the food, and every time they go out to eat, he shuts down all her favorite restaurants.
I forgot.
I don't think John would actually do that, but it would be like, oh no, I don't want to take him to my spot.
I wonder if he even has fun at bars.
I think he does. I think he has fun wherever he is. He's such a cool dude.
He's such a cool dude. I just wonder if he feels like his professional brain takes over.
We can ask him next time we see him.
Yep.
So we do our opening night, and Chris seemed so proud. He came out in his voice and was like, everybody come inside. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, this guy has energy, actually.
Yeah.
He's really feels like he's going to impress the people. And I felt so good for him that he even had a moment of that.
Yes.
Like any moment, even if it's a minute, if anytime somebody who's been so down and out can feel like they're impressive, I wanted to cry for him just when he opened the door.
It was really beautiful. Yeah, watching that whole staff just really take in and cherish the renovation. This show has more emotional stakes than people give it credit for.
Agreed. One of those things that made me really emotional was them deciding to make the St. Jude's Burger give $1 to the St. Jude's Ranch for Children to the orphanage. I thought that was so beautiful and smart. Mm-hmm. And like... I will happily pay an extra $1 every time I eat a burger, if that's what it goes to. And I think most people feel that way, probably.
Definitely.
So I thought that was a really cool touch, especially for somebody whose bar, Chris's bar, he probably cares about that. Mm-hmm. And he seems like a sweet person.
Well, I know St. Jude's does also so much with cancer.
Right, of course.
And his son.
Of course.
Stepson. But beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that because of the second well and gun, the opening actually was able to go pretty well. Justin was moving rapid, fast. The kitchen seemed to be understanding the assembly line set up, and I really was impressed.
It was great.
Any complaints about them? I mean, there really wasn't anything that I was like...
No, I mean, I think they still have room to grow. I felt in the kitchen there was maybe still a little bit of efficiency to learn. But yeah. At the same time, one day later, really, really phenomenal work.
Really, really great. And yeah. To have 150 people there and not to see many frowning faces... That's an accomplishment. I know we see it on the show a lot, but I like to take a minute to congratulate them, especially because after that, we have our 6 weeks later. And oh, boy.
This is a bit of a 180.
So I'm watching this episode in studio, just so you guys know, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, there's only a minute left. And Jeff comes running over to me, who's previously watched it, and he was like, oh, my God, you're about to get to the crazy part. And I'm saying, I was like, no, Jeff, there's only a minute left. And he's like, no. Just wait. So I'm like, what could possibly happen in a minute? So 6 weeks later comes on and they're giving us an update like they usually do. And it first says that Chris and Amber split, which I'm thinking, wow, 6 weeks later, you know, them splitting, that's kind of okay, maybe something, whatever. And then it says Chris is now married to somebody else.
Yep.
Bomb drop.
It was a bomb drop. Yes.
Yes. You get it, Steve. Like,
yeah.
So our interpretation of that, and we will talk about this a little more in the Where Are They Now segment of our news, but we thought based on the verbiage that meant he was 6 weeks later married. And it seems like that is not actually the case. Still unclear about exactly what happened. So let's actually get right into that. Let's get into our news and break down Where Are They Now, the Valley Saloon. AfterBuzz TV News. What do you got for us, Jeff?
So one thing I will say, based on this timeline, I think it might have been about 6 weeks before he was married to someone new. Because they shot this in January of 2017. And according to the Clark County marriage records, it was on February 27th, 2017 that he got married. So about a month after Bar Rescue visited.
What?
So in 4 weeks since that renovation, he left Amber and got married.
And then Amber left...
Vegas. Fresh start.
Wow. So it was six weeks later, he was married to another woman. He had been engaged. This is what's wild to me. He was engaged to Amber for 5 years.
It's bananas. Who did he meet? It must have been someone he knew.
I always think when people are engaged for a really long time, in my brain, I'm like, good for them. They realize you don't have to rush things. There's no, like, they want to take the next step, and then later on, they'll take the next step. If I was engaged to somebody for 5 years... And then he was married to somebody under 2 months later, I would be livid.
Yeah, and just kind of hurt.
It just doesn't seem to me, and this is a judgment from afar, but somebody who would do that was not making rash decisions anymore. Like, it seems like he did not fully get his ish together.
At the same time, though, I don't know if Amber and Chris...
Were
meant to be.
I don't know either.
Right.
But I don't know that he was meant to be with this other girl.
4 weeks.
So what else? Where else are we with this bar?
Yeah, so I think for the most part, things are looking pretty good with this bar. A lot of the Yelp reviews do seem to potentially allude to Chris. There are no names that are used, but I do see a lot of this drunk guy came over and yelled at us. And if I had to pick from the crop we saw from the show, I'd probably assume that was Chris. Some of these reviews are pre-Bar Rescue, though, but some of them are post-Bar Rescue.
How about the ones that have to do with cockroaches, Jeff?
So this is not ideal, but in June of 2017, only 5 months after the makeover, the Valley Saloon was closed by health inspectors due to a cockroach infestation. Inspectors found 30 inside a floor drain. Inspectors also found fruit flies in 15 bottles of vodka, tequila, and bourbon. And there was also a cotton-like growth and mold on the chili.
I don't know about you, but I love cotton mold on my chili.
I'm fine. I don't like the green molds, but I do like the cotton mold. So.
I love how every time we do these Where Are They Now, they're just taking a piss on John Taffer. It's like, stop peeing on him. Can you just, like, appreciate his work and then change your lives?
I know.
You've got to do the work.
Yeah.
So we are people who actually would be willing to do the work, which is why... We have amazing takeaways from Taffer. So I want to know for our special segment this week, what is your Taffer takeaway?
So my Taffer takeaway, I have a couple, but I'm going to stick with this one. If you're a manager, know how you function in the workflow of your company to make them succeed the most. So we were talking about the crew actually did better when Chris wasn't there. Sometimes that's the case. If you're too much of a micromanaging in-person manager, sometimes you're best to give your staff directives and then let them do their thing. And I think this was an example of the stress test where Chris not being there, helping them, is sometimes a thing managers need to be aware of.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that the main one for me this episode is about staying humble. I know I harped on this a lot, but I love that moment with Justin that he doesn't snap back and why he ended up being the best employee there is because he didn't do that, and realizing when somebody knows more than you. And Taffer knows more.
Right.
And I feel like he saw that and he respected it and he called it out. And that's pretty cool. So staying humble, and that's how you get on successful people's good side.
Great. Love it.
Love that. All right. Before we sign out, we're going to go to some quick predictions. This is basically just some brief ones.
Some insider scoop.
Some insider scoop.
From our very own Roxanne Stryer.
Yeah, because you don't really predict that much on the show. I predict there's going to be 50 more seasons of Bar Rescue.
Yep.
But what I will say is that John Taffer came on The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro, which is a late night show that I co-host every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to thetomorrowshow.com. Shameless plug.
It's good. I'm a fan. The show's awesome, guys.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's hilarious.
And Taffer came on our show a couple months ago, and he was talking about this new season, and he was telling us how he's a producer on it, how he gets to make so many decisions on it, and how this season, more than any other season, is crazy high stakes, super duper emotional, and just out of this world. And so I predict that we're going to get some very, very similar to this emotional, different sides of Taffer than we've seen ever before.
I'm here for it. Shows need to keep their formula fresh. And this was, I haven't ever seen an episode like this, and we're hundreds of episodes into the show, so.
Me neither, and I love that. And you know who else I bet did? Our captain at Undergaro. So don't forget to tell him how you were feeling, and if you want to keep the conversation going with us, Jeff, where can people find you?
You guys can follow me online at Jeffrey C. Graham or on Instagram at Jeffrey Crane Graham. I love chatting with the fans, so reach out and we'll have a conversation.
I love it too, and I'm at Roxy Stryer, and don't forget, we're at AfterBuzz TV. And guys, if you are already over there, don't forget it's also our fearless founder's birthday to get today. Woo! At Maria Menounos. Wish her a happy birthday. It's a big one, so send her some love. We'll be back next week to talk more Bar Rescue. We love you guys, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Bye. See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.